Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
49ers got a great performance from Nick Mullins. He was interviewed by Aaron Andrews. And just about all of you out there, I checked on Twitter. Nick Mullins has 8,000 Twitter followers last night. That's how many he had last night. I'm sure it went up substantially. But 8,000 Twitter followers, as anonymous as an NFL quarterback can be. And then he steps onto the stage, throws three touchdown passes in his debut as a quarterback. Only three quarterbacks have thrown three or more touchdown passes in their debut. Mark Bulger, Marcus Mariota, and now Nick Mullins, who did it last night. He was interviewed by Aaron Andrews, and this is a great interview. Just listen.
What, Monday? That not only could you end up starting this game, but it's also your first snap in a regular season game in the NFL. How did you go out there and make this look so easy?
Prepare like I'm the starter every week, and this week was my week, so just got to take advantage of opportunities when they come, and they came.
I was told you are a calm, cool, and collective guy, but looks like you are getting emotional. How does this feel for you?
I'm calm, cool, collective until I have to bring my emotions out, yeah. And they'll come out. So I'll talk to my friends back in Birmingham, and but other than that, I'm just going to enjoy the win of my teammates.
Congratulations. Go join this.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah. Go Niners.
It's a great interview from Aaron Andrews, but I think it also is phenomenal to think about. Is that a whiny baby noise in the background?
The crybaby.
We have to fire Danny G.
What do you mean?
Fan.
I don't control the sound anymore, Clay. That's Roberto playing.
May have to fire Roberto.
That's the baby crying.
We have an uplifting moment there. That is a pathetic Raider fan. I'm about to dive into that emotional great moment.
You know what?
Moment.
Everybody hates on the Raiders nationally so much. I wonder if this was the other way around, if you would be singing the praises of some third-string Raider quarterback, or if you would have just brushed it off as, both teams suck and it was a crappy game last night.
No, this is Raiders.
I think you lost the bet. You took the Raiders, you lost the bet, and that's why you came out so mad. That's why.
No, this is an end of. You are trying to defend the indefensible.
I am not trying to defend anything. I'm saying that as Raider fans, we're used to being piled on. Everybody piles on when it's going
you
bad.
Can't
and then
be
when
the
Raiders,
victim here.
No.
In
2016, when the Raiders looked so good, all these media guys acted like they had been with the Raiders the whole time. During the 4-12 seasons. Oh, I knew they were going to get it together. Yeah, right. They have been talking junk and making all these jokes.
The Raiders,
Khalil Mack is the best.
Because of the way you're acting this morning, I hope John Gruden has the draft of his life and has a really good team on the field next season just so you can eat it.
That's not going to happen. Raider
yeah,
talk
but it would be
banned.
Fun. It would be fun, though.
When we come back, severe punishment for that disrespectful baby crying noise on this show. Nick Mullins is a GD American hero, and you just ruined his moment on the show. Defend yourself, Roberto.
I'm sorry, Clay.
No. Don't. We had a great moment.
It was just a scrimmage
Everybody was going to be coming together thinking this is what sports does. It can unite us all. Even if you're a guy who's undrafted, even if you go to a small school, you can have your moment in the sun. Nick Mullins was about to have his moment in the sun on Outkick, and you just rained on his parade like a damn Raider fan would.
First Derrick Rose, now Nick Mullins. Everybody's crying now, Clay.
It's a strong man who cries on television because he's so overwhelmed emotionally by his awesomeness.
Do you think Nick Mullins is going to lead the 49ers to the playoffs?
No, but if he wins five games in a row, they might give him $137 million like they did Jimmy Garoppolo.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
And we're going to be joined here shortly by Joel Klatt. He's got the lead college football assignment for Fox Sports. And we will talk about the college football weekend to come. Lots of big games as we enter into November. The College Football Playoff Committee has given us our first rankings. We'll see whether Joel and I agree on many different subjects. Should be a lot of fun. But for those of you waking up across the country, the San Francisco 49ers and their unheralded and frankly unheard of quarterback Nick Mullins dominated the Oakland Raiders last night in the first game of Week 9. 34-3, a beatdown. The Raiders quit on John Gruden. If you are a Raiders fan, positive news for you. You only owe John Gruden $95 million more dollars. Poll question that is up right now, and I'll ask Joel this question too. Poll question that is up right now, which everybody can jump in on. Which is the worst contract? We're approaching 10,000 of you who have voted so far. John Gruden's $100 million Raider contract, Gus Malzahn's $49 million Auburn contract, or Megyn Kelly's $87 million NBC contract. Which of those contracts in your mind, Joel Klatt, is the worst?
Oh, Gus Malzahn. you know, just because Gruden, there might be, and this is going to sound insane, but there might be a genius to this because of all the cap space he's clearing and what they could potentially do in free agency and how they could build this. It's so early, right? And for Megyn Kelly, she's going to land on her feet, probably get a tell-all. I mean, that's great for her. It was probably bad on NBC's part from Jump Street. But the reason I say Gus Malzahn is they wanted to fire him last year. Do you remember when, I think it was LSU came back from 20, or was it 21, early in the season? And it was like, they talked about that Monday. It's like, well, is it time to move on now? Then all of a sudden he wins two home games. And granted, they were great wins against Georgia and then wins the Iron Bowl. And they give him an obscene contract. So that's what I think is the worst contract, because you had resigned yourself to the fact that you were going to fire him, and then you give him that. So listen, I think that they're reaping a little bit what they sowed. This was handwriting on the wall for maybe a year and a half at Auburn. I think a lot of us could see that this was going on. A lot of us could see that the offensive line wasn't quite what it was. A lot of us could see that they had some serious tendencies on their offense schematically. When I talked with a couple of guys at the SEC Network about this, Jordan Rogers did an unbelievable breakdown of Auburn and their tendencies from a personnel grouping standpoint, and they were so stark. I mean, so stark. There were some incredible tells of when they were running, when they were passing, and unfortunately, and I hate to say it like this, but it was very high school, you know, and Gus has had a lot of success, but there was some things going on the offensive side, and unfortunately he hasn't broken those tendencies, Clay, and so that's why I would say Gus Malzahn. He could give you a long answer there why I think that one is the worst contract.
You can go vote, by the way. Find me on Twitter at Clay Travis. That poll question up at the top of my Twitter feed. All right. Got a lot of big college football games coming up tomorrow, and frankly, some games on Friday as well. But before we go to those, I got to say, you have been coming off the top rope on UCF and their playoff chances and deserve whether or not they deserve to be in the mix. And I'm sure you were watching last night, as I was as well. It's over. You give up 670 yards to Temple. Even though they won, Alabama would score 100 points on Central Florida if they needed to, and I don't even think that's hyperbole. I'm not sure UCF is a top 10 team. I think they're probably not even close. I'm not sure, frankly, Joel, whether they're a top 25 team. You were beating this drum in advance of the first college football playoff rankings. I'm sure you're even more convinced after what you saw last night against Temple.
Of course I am. Of course I'm convinced. And by the way, if you look at any rating system that has any number of a lot of variables, a lot of simulations, the Sagarin ratings, the FPI ratings, they're not even close. They're not even close. In fact, and they would back up your sentiment that they're not even a top 25 team. And I would say they're bordering on that. Listen, if you put them up against some teams that are not ranked right now, and not even ranked by the committee, if you put them up against Michigan State or Wisconsin or, even a team like Purdue, Washington, you really think those teams wouldn't throttle UCF? Because I think that they would this year. Now, I think what's happening is they're living off their reputation from a year ago. And a year ago, they were much better than they were this year, that they are this year. They had more NFL talent. They were faster, in particular on the defensive side. And last year, I would have said they were a top 25 team, but they proved that out, at least in my estimation, including that win over Auburn. Now, I still don't believe that they should go to the playoff. But did you know, how about this? Did you know that before last night, UCF was the only team in the country, Clay, that had not played a team with a winning record yet? So how in the world is Danny White writing a letter essentially complaining about the structure of college football and the way that the ESPN analysts are talking about his team? It's like, what are you doing? You have no concept, apparently, Danny White, even though he's got history in the sport, of what it means to go through a schedule in a real conference. Even a conference that gives their teams somewhat of a break, like the SEC with the 8 games, and they'll play an FCS late. And, I've been hard on that. And I'll tell you that that's exponentially harder than what UCF does in a Group of 5 conference, even if it is the best Group of 5 conference out there. It's just not even the same at all. I go through this every year, and every year I say the same thing. It would take such a unique team and 2-year run for me to say that a Group of 5 team should be included in the playoff. So this has never been, a take like, oh, I hate UCF. I don't give a crap about UCF. What I do give a crap about is the fact that if you're going to get included into a 4-team playoff, you better be one of the 4 best teams, or at least damn close. And at this point, they're not even close.
Is LSU close to being able to be competitive with Alabama in your mind come Saturday?
I don't think that they are. Now, you got to take that with a grain of salt, because I've been saying this all year, and they've proven me wrong several times. So Tiger fans, I'm sure, are thrilled that I'm still not on the bandwagon, and quite frankly, could bode well for them. Having said that, I don't think that they have an offense that can even come close to Alabama, because Alabama is not a team that I think you're going to hold under 30 points. Do you? I certainly don't. Oklahoma and Alabama are not getting held under 30 points all season. So you better have an offense that can compete. Now, when you're facing Oklahoma, it's much easier to compete because their defense isn't anywhere close to what Alabama's is. Alabama's got a top 12 scoring defense in the country, top 15 scoring defense. I think they're 10th right now. They're certainly not what they have been, Clay, but you cannot convince me that Joe Burrow and that offense for LSU is going to have the ability to score 38 points. And here's my rationale. On average, Alabama scores about 23 to 25 points more against everybody they play than what those teams give up on average. I would call it like a plus minus. So Alabama's like a plus 25 offense. OU is right around there as well. They're 23.5. Those are the two best plus minus offenses in the country. So let's say they do that to LSU. Okay, so they're scoring significantly less than they would in a normal week. So they're not scoring their 50, 53 points. Clay, let's say they're scoring 35. Okay, that's still around a plus 23. I'll give LSU even the benefit of the doubt. And that's a little lower than the plus 23. You mean to tell me that LSU is going to score 36 or 38? I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
I'm with you there. What about the other big game in the SEC? Are you buying into Kentucky having a chance against Georgia?
No. In fact, I think it's the number one issue with the conference is that Kentucky is right now on the run that they're on, quite candidly. it gives people ammunition against the SEC. You always have the barrier to get over of the eight conference games for people that want to argue against the SEC, right? And quite frankly, you don't need to change it because the committee is going to continue to reward the SEC, which is fine. And again, this is not me taking a shot. I wouldn't change either if I was the SEC, in particular a team like Alabama that schedules to win a championship, and rightly so, and good for them. And in particular, if you're not going to get dinged for it. Having said that, if Kentucky is your East champion, and that's a team that, I mean, is even worse offensively than LSU. I mean, Kentucky can barely play offense out of a wet paper bag. I mean, they are not good at all on the offensive side. Their defense is very good, but I think Georgia wins that game handily. I would take Georgia with damn near my mortgage, Clay. I mean.
I have already
not looked, that good. Come on, you gotta admit that.
No, look, I mean, Kentucky fans.
Good, my goodness,
Kentucky fans are furious at me for saying that. I thought they were going to lose to Mizzou last week. Mizzou choked
they
away that game.
They were down 11. They were down 11 with six. What was it? 6 minutes to go.
Yes,
and were essentially handed the game by the officials.
Yeah, it was an awful call on that pass interference play. But I'm on Georgia big. I'll give all my picks, by the way, at the end of the final segment. What game? You have the Texas game, correct?
Yes, West Virginia at Texas.
All right, so let's go to the Big 12 here for a moment. Texas, obviously, you called it last week when we were talking. You said, you know what, I think this Oklahoma State game is going to be tough for them. It was a great game. Oklahoma State got the win. You got Mike Gundy's rant after the game about Twitter, which was phenomenal. And now Texas probably, they're still in the mix to make the Big 12 title game, but they're out of the mix for the playoff, I think everybody would have to acknowledge. West Virginia still in the mix alongside of Oklahoma. Can West Virginia win this game against Texas on the road in Austin?
Sure they can, because, you know, there's only been one game where they haven't played well, and granted it was on the road and at Ames, and they played awful in that game. But every other game, boy, this is one of the most potent offenses in the country. And this is a team that defensively is still the top scoring defense in the Big 12. They've got some really solid players on that side of the football. And West Virginia is salty, man, I got to tell you. And quite frankly, their quarterback, I think, could still get himself back into the conversation of the Heisman Trophy. Now, I don't think he's winning the Heisman Trophy. I think that's a two-horse race that is riding off into the sunset between Kyler Murray and Tua Tagovailoa. And Kyler is still a ways behind Tua in that race. But Will could certainly get the New York. Will Grier is a really good player, and he's got a really deep and quality core of wide receivers around him. Probably the best core of wide receivers in the country in particular, because no one talks about him. Everyone talks about the Ohio State group, which is good, very good. But West Virginia is right in that same category. This is going to be a really solid game. The thing that you want to pay attention to is that for whatever reason, Texas plays to their level of competition. And I think it has to do with the fact that it's still just early in Tom Herman's tenure. So the culture is still trying to take hold. You saw a couple of seniors that were knuckleheads last week that were wanted to show up late for a meeting and ditch some classes. And both of the corners had to be suspended for the first quarter. And then they give up 260 yards in the first quarter, mainly through the air. Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis. So, you know, Texas is still having to do that, but what they will do, Clay, is play the level of competition. So when they faced a ranked team this year, they've risen up and they've played their best football, in particular against Oklahoma in the Red River game. And so I fully expect that they'll do the same this week. They're much better at home than they are on the road, in particular on the defensive side. I think that defense is uniquely suited to play against West Virginia because they've got big, tall, long corners. And those guys won't be suspended this week in the first quarter. And all of them are over 6 foot. And they're going to be, I think, right in the crosshairs of that passing game for the Mountaineers. That should be a great matchup. I can't wait to watch it play out.
We're talking to Joel Klatt. The other game that's big in terms of the college football playoff picture is Penn State going on the road against Michigan. You've had Michigan a couple of times. I don't think you've called a Penn State game. But do you think Penn State has the horses to keep this game close in Ann Arbor?
You know, they should, because think about it. Even in the games that they've lost, going back now, Clay, shoot, the last five times they've lost, which is going all the way back to their Big Ten championship year, the last time they were blown out, if I'm not mistaken, was at Ann Arbor 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Every other loss has been a game in which not only was close, but they held the lead in the fourth quarter. So everything suggests that they'll probably be close in this game. Two things that are working against them, though. They have been through a little bit of a gauntlet where they have played really close fourth quarter games for like four straight games. They've been, within 6 points late in these ball games, one possession ball games, and that starts to become really taxing because colleges, quite frankly, college programs are not built like NFL teams, which have a very thin margin between the talent on their team and the talent on the other team, to where I think that when you play those number of one possession games, it just taxes a college team more for whatever reason. And they've played those in the last like 4 weeks. Meanwhile, Michigan's coming off a bye, and that's the best defense in the country. Point blank. There's no doubt in my mind that's the best defense in the country. And one of the only things that Penn State has at their disposal is their quarterback and his ability to make plays and potentially throw the ball. Well, Trace McSorley's completion percentage is 12 points lower than it was a year ago, and their running game is not anywhere close to it was a year ago. I think Michigan is really, really good. The holes that they've had in the past are no longer holes. Offensively, they're pretty good, in particular on third down converting because of Shea Patterson. He's got big, tall, explosive wide receivers on the outside. Tariq Black is starting to get more healthy, will be on the field. And they're like I already talked about their defense, and their run game has been dominant. Caron Higdon has 100 yards in his last six games, and his 118-yard average right now is in the top 10 in college football as far as running backs go. I do not see Michigan losing at home to a team that's banged up and coming in that should be really tired, and I think this might be the first time that Penn State has blown out since 2 years ago in Ann Arbor against these same Wolverines.
The Big Ten desperately needs Michigan and Ohio State to both win out all the way into their game, right?
Yeah. See, this is where I start to bristle at this. You know, the way the committee ranked teams, yes, your sentiment is true, but the committee is just frauds, Clay. Like, it's just frauds, and I've got the data to back it up. Can you believe that they ranked those four ACC teams? The ACC is not good this year. They're not good this year. And outside of Clemson, that's a league that is really bad. And the reason I know that is because they're 3-9, worst record of any Power 5 team, against other Power 5 conferences, including Notre Dame. 3-9. A team that is ranked by the committee, Virginia, got beat by Indiana. Indiana. Boston College is ranked. They got drilled by Purdue. You know, Pitt has lost really twice, in big games in the non-conference. One to Penn State got drilled, and they lost to UCF. Their only win in a Big Ten versus ACC matchup was Duke over Northwestern. And so all of a sudden, you've got these four teams that the committee included, and I think it's because Frank Beamer is the most influential voice on that committee. This is my problem when you get 13 individuals in a room, is that one person's going to carry a lot of weight, and that person's bias is going to influence college football to an extent that is, at least in my estimation, uncomfortable. Those four teams at the back end of the rankings for the ACC, on average, not total, but on average, are ranked 16 spots higher in the committee poll than they are in the Sagarin ratings. 16. Every other conference, Clay, every team is ranked within the margin of error, which is three spots either direction, on average, based on the Sagarin ratings. And the Sagarin ratings have thousands of simulations in order to rank teams. That is unacceptable bias. Unacceptable bias that is influencing college football. So now all of a sudden, and by the way, the only conference that bore the brunt of it was the Big Ten. They were the only one that was a minus in that margin of what I was talking about. On average, their teams are 3.25 spot lower. That's just the teams that are ranked in the committee rankings versus the Sagarin rankings. And by the way, when you look at the teams that weren't ranked out of the Big Ten, they're higher in all the computer polls than every single ACC team that was included. And I'm talking about Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Purdue mainly. You could even throw Northwestern in there. If you're going to rank Virginia, you can easily make a case that Northwestern should have been ranked because they're higher than Virginia in all of those polls. So the ACC has been, for whatever reason, propped up by this committee. I think that the reason is Frank Beamer. And now guys like you ask me if the Big Ten is up against it. Well, they shouldn't be, but they've been falsely put up against it by this 13-person committee, which is just flat fraudulent. What's Gene Smith doing in the committee room? He's the Ohio State Athletic Director, and he's supposed to be in there actually fighting for that conference, or you would think he was going to be. What is his argument? How in the world does Gene Smith allow them to rank all those teams? You've got Boston College, North Carolina State, Virginia, and there was one other, North Carolina State. Unbelievable. Oh, Syracuse is the other one. I'm sorry. Those were the four teams. I don't like the direction we're going, where it just everything in college football depends on the makeup of that iteration of the committee. So 2 years ago, Barry Alvarez had the best voice, and the Big Ten was being overrated a little bit. Now it's the ACC because of Frank Beamer, and they're being overvalued by 16 spots on average. That's staggering, and it should shock and concern everybody that loves this sport. And I love this sport far too much to sit here and allow some 13-person committee and some fraudulent system to start ranking teams when we hire and fire coaches based on rankings. And this is how we're trying to crown a champion? Are you kidding me? Michigan's resume is being pulled right from under their feet right now. If I was Michigan, I would be livid. Now, is their spot in the committee rankings probably good? Yeah, it's probably good. But their resume is getting just dumped on by this committee by the fact that Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Northwestern have all been rated below where they should be rated.
I just wish you had some opinions occasionally, Joel.
Well, I mean, this to me, people call, you know, they're like, well, you know, this is, look at that opinion. To me, at least I have data to back it up, right? I mean, on average, 16 spots. Does that not shock you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I it's funny because when I wrote in my you know weekly breakdown, which I do every Sunday morning and put up on OutKick, my starting 11 column, I wrote that Clemson was the only top 25 team in the ACC in my mind. Right, that the rest of the conference was not very good, and then several
the thing,
ACC
in everyone's
fans.
Mind.
Yeah,
in everyone's mind. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, when the committee rankings came out, all these ACC fans came at me and they were like, see, look how much quality depth there is in the ACC. And I'm like, you guys are full of it. I hadn't compared it to the Sagarin data or anything like that. I'm just using my eye test watching, like, you and I, we love college football. So, I mean, I sit and watch 14 hours of college football, and I'm not an X's and O's guy or anything else. But if you watch 14 hours of college football a week, you're going to have a pretty good idea of the overall landscape of college football, which teams have looked good over the course of the season, which teams haven't. And Clemson is the only team in the ACC that's impressed me in any degree. And really, that's only been in the last 3 weeks, but Clemson has gotten white hot the last couple of weeks. Otherwise, there's been a lot of mediocrity in the ACC. So when I saw the committee rankings, I did think the ACC was insanely overvalued.
Insanely overvalued. And that's how everyone's like, well, it really only matters the top four. And I'm like, yeah. Here's my contention. Very similar to turkey dinner, yeah, the top four is like the gravy. It's like the most important part of the ranking system, right? But you got to understand that that gravy has a recipe to it, and the recipe is what happens from 5 to 25, right? So
yeah.
If you're changing the recipe, you're changing the gravy. That's my contention. I was like, well, don't worry about it. Everyone tells me constantly, like, well, this stuff doesn't matter, Joel. It's just about the top four. Well, how do you think we get the top four? Are these people really that obtuse?
There's a lot of dumb people who are college football fans. Yes, is my answer, sadly. Have you been to the state of Alabama, Joel? Joel Glatt, I appreciate you. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy. I'll be watching that Texas-West Virginia game. Thanks for getting up early with us.
I'm just glad you didn't make me answer that. I'm on to Birmingham in half an hour.
I don't want you to get assassinated. You got a big game to
later,
get to.
Bud.
All right, that's Joel Klatt. Go follow him on Twitter at Joel Klatt. Fired up. I love Joel.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hope all of you are having a fantastic Friday. We certainly are here as well, especially when it's time for the Animal Thunderdome. Cue the music, boys.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
All right, let's go first to Dub because we're continuing to search for updates on the tiger hunt. Dub, what's the latest?
Still no update on the trio of man-eaters in India as the search continues.
Nawab Shafali Khan, full name, his name is escaping me right now. I think I wrote it down somewhere.
Nawab Shafat Ali Khan.
Nawab Shafat Ali Khan. We still don't know. He's still hunting the man-eating tigers that have killed 14 people in India. If you haven't heard that interview, is that in this month's
Greatest
Animal
Bites.
Thunderdome?
Yes, it is. There's a special podcast up right now, Animal Thunderdome Greatest Bites Part 2, and that is included in there.
Yeah, so if you have not subscribed to the podcast, you should. But as an incentive, the final one for the month of October was the Best of the Animal Thunderdome Part 2, which features that interview with the man out in India we had live on the show hunting a man-eating tiger. In much less serious news, what are the stories that are out there right now, Danny G?
Well, Clay, your favorite snakes are back inside the Animal Thunderdome. You know how they love to curl up somewhere warm, right?
Yes.
Well, imagine opening your hood. I'm sure you've changed your own oil before.
Never done
checked,
it.
How about check the oil in your
never
Range
done
Rover?
It.
Never,
done
ever,
it.
Ever?
I've never. My dad showed me how to check the oil, and my wife has checked the oil, but I in my life have never checked the oil on any engine. Here is what I have done for my car's betterment. I have zoomed out the back of the car. My car window got broken in Atlanta, and I sucked out all the glass with the thing at the gas station. Other than putting gas in the car, I do nothing for my car.
Well, if you were to open your hood to check the oil,
I don't even know how to open the hood on my Range Rover.
Oh, man. Imagine seeing a python wrapped around your engine under the hood.
You know what? I would never see it. There could be like 8 snakes in the Range Rover front hood. I wouldn't know because I've never opened the hood.
Well, Tony Morrison, a professional snake catcher in Brisbane, Queensland, said he was called out to remove a nearly 5-foot python this past Tuesday. He arrived to find the snake had wrapped itself around the engine of a resident's car. Says the python had likely been attracted to the warmth under the hood of the vehicle after a meal, because when Morrison pulls the snake out, there's video of this, you see the meal inside the snake's belly. Said that the snake had been wrapped around the car's engine for several days before being discovered.
Yeah, it's not good. By the way, I have jump started cars before. So I know how to put like the clamps on and jump start a car, but that's it.
Impressive.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go to your neck of the woods here. A visitor to a Tennessee resort captured video of an unusual visitor, a black bear, wandering around inside the hotel lobby. I don't know if you've ever been here before, Clay, the Margaritaville Resort.
That's actually a big deal, like the
Jimmy Buffett-themed hotel.
Yeah, my wife actually stayed there. I think that's right by – that's Pigeon Forge, right?
Yeah.
That's right by – they have the Dollywood. I think it's still called Dollywood. My family was up there and went to the Dollywood. That's Dolly Parton's resort right outside the Smoky Mountains. So they had a black bear just wandering in Margaritaville?
Just chilling.
5 o'clock somewhere.
He was staying at the hotel. This guy's name, Eric Benneker, he has the video up online. It's had thousands of hits. People tripping off this bear just wandering through the resort's lobby. Nobody was in the lobby at the time. Footage shows the bear wandering around for a few minutes before leaving through the automatic doors. Resort officials say that bears have been outside their facility before, but this is the first time one of the bears has actually walked inside the hotel.
Maybe you wanted a cheeseburger in paradise. Maybe it was 5 o'clock somewhere. Maybe he was concerned. No shirt, no shoes, no service. A little bit of Jimmy Buffett love early this morning for everybody across the nation.
And quickly, police in Oregon said two mountain lions were spotted on a university campus. Officers attempted to unsuccessfully shoot one of them. They made loud noise when they got there, authorities did. One took off, the other stayed. So the police chief made the decision that the cat that stayed had to be put down because it presented danger. So they brought in their sharpshooter. He missed. The cougar fled the scene after the missed shot. State wildlife officials said they're working with police to monitor the situation.
I think I'm not an expert on this, but if your role is to be the sharpshooter, you can't miss when you're aiming at a cougar.
That's your one job. Your one job.
That's what you got to do. It's like being a field goal kicker. You got to come in and make the field goal or you get fired. Sharpshooters got to make that, shot. Really disappointed the state of Oregon. So what happens? Must have been calling plays for him in overtime.